Welcome to Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
March 3rd, 2013 was a day on which the Swiss electorate went to the polls to decide on several rather important issues. One of them, the so-called rip-off initiative. The second one, a new family law. The third one, a law on zoning, rather complex issue. And we also had an interesting vote on the cantonal level in the canton of Graubünden. They said no to a bid to host the 2022 Winter Olympics. We'll be discussing these issues with Peter Haller, Switzerland in Sound's political correspondent and analyst. Peter, let's take it one by one. The so-called rip-off initiative, what was behind that?
You have to go back to 2008 when we were in the midst of all the bank collapses and the shares rocketing downwards. And at that time, the Swiss government had to rescue Switzerland's biggest bank, UBS, with huge sums of money. And later on, it was seen that the managers of many banks in the US and also in Britain who were rescued by government funds had still received incredible bonuses and salaries. And this prompted a Swiss senator, Thomas Minder, to launch an initiative against rip-off salaries and bonuses for businessmen, above all managers and above all bankers. And he got the necessary signatures together. And today, after 5 years of back and forth in Parliament, the initiative was passed by an overwhelming record-seeking 68% approval. It's only the second time in 20 years that an initiative has been approved by such a large extent.
This, to me, at first glance, Peter, would suggest a tremendous, overwhelming expression of anger on the part of the Swiss voter.
Yes, I think the result of the vote is an indication of great anger. It's also an indication that not very many people studied the initiative text. They just wanted to say enough is enough. It was a belly decision and not particularly rational.
The plot thickens. It gets juicier here. There's an intrigue, an element of intrigue involved, and also a simple human reaction a couple of weeks ago. I mean, the timing couldn't have been worse. Daniel Vasella, the retiring director of Novartis, the huge Basel-based pharmaceutical company, it was revealed was being paid off 72 million Swiss francs, which is roughly the same in U.S. dollars, just to keep quiet and not go to the competition for a period of 6 years. And we talk about anger and backlash. This obviously didn't help the cause very much for those who were against the rip-off initiative. And if anything, it helped really put it over the top.
Oh, yes, I'm quite sure that played a considerable role, because the other thing you have to remember is that the Swiss are rather hypocritical when it comes to money matters, because, for instance, everybody knows what Mr. Vasella earned and earns, but nobody knows what the colleague in the next office or the colleague at the workbench earns at all, because the Swiss are probably the most secretive people that there are when it comes to what they earn.
And, of course, this rip-off initiative, I mean, overwhelming. Now the politicians, it goes back to Parliament, where they're going to have to work out a law. I mean, this referendum doesn't mean there's a law which has now been passed. The law has to first be written. That's going to be quite a challenge.
Well, actually, what is interesting is that all the presidents of the Swiss parties in the government have said, we will have to transpose this into law one-to-one, i.e. exactly as the initiative calls for. But what actually will happen is that the government now has a year to submit a law to Parliament, a draft law to Parliament, and then Parliament will have to go over it word by word. And this is where the whole thing becomes very difficult, because, of course, some of the demands like a new tax on bonuses and so on won't even be talked about, because it's not part of the initiative, but it's what everybody was hoping would happen. It will be very difficult to put this into a law which will not harm the country. And what is interesting is that the president of the Radical Party said today that Parliament will have to pass this initiative as a law, one-to-one, even if it harms the country. For instance, there are details in it which are very difficult to put into practice. In other words, the executive board will have to be re-elected every year, which is, bureaucratically speaking, a very difficult and complicated matter. It will also, for instance, not allow hello and goodbye payments, as they're called these days in business. In other words, you can't pay anybody to come to work for you if he's a very sought-after manager, and you can't give him a bye-bye bonus, as Mr. Vassella was due to get.
Just before we move on, I guess the bottom line of this, Peter, even though, as you point out, it will take some time for an actual law to be worked out in Parliament, I would say this is a warning shot across the bow, wouldn't you agree?
Yes, I think it may be part of a trend which the EU supports as well, into a sort of globalized remuneration plan for good governance in business and so on. Hard to say.
Peter, let's move on to the new family law. And this was promoted by, let's say, the left wing, certainly was supported by the Social Democrats. It was supported by evangelical parties. It was supported by the Catholic Party, the Christian People's Party. What essentially did that law provide for, and we should say here, it did not get through. It won on the popular vote, but it did not receive the necessary majority of Swiss cantons or states to pull it through. What did it want to do?
Basically, it wanted to make it possible to have a business career or an employment career and also have a family. In other words, in Switzerland, where only 76% of women work, it was designed to help more women get into the workplace and, for instance, regulate matters such as childcare, child welfare, school lunchtime meals, and also paying for women to be further educated, even if they had children at home.
Well, the Swiss People's Party, a traditionalist party, I don't want to call it a right-wing party, that doesn't mean very much, but a traditional value party in this country, was definitely very much against it. They were almost in the minority. But basically, to risk an oversimplification, and it is really an oversimplification, their strong argument, which seems to have appealed to the rural vote especially, was we don't want the state raising our children. That's the job of the family. Is that more or less it?
Yes, and you could also say no more state control than really necessary in matters such as child education and rearing. Let this remain the matter of the cantons as it is now. And that was basically an argument that appealed, as you say, to the rural areas. It's an interesting vote because 54% of the population approved in numbers of voters. 200,000 more voters said yes than no. But nevertheless, the issue was turned down because no majority of cantons approved it. And this is because the breakdown of Swiss cantons is that the rural areas have really more political power than the town areas, which are smaller in inland area. And what this means is that the issue not only is a town-country issue, it's also a language issue, because the Italian speakers and the French speakers overwhelmingly approve the idea of more state control of child rearing and welfare.
I think if we want to be honest about our analysis here, I've heard a couple of things being mentioned in passing during the debate. Number one, can't have the cake and eat it too. Either you decide to work or you decide to have a family. And number two, I've heard discussions over the years from people who say, in Switzerland, of course, look at the United States, what has happened to that society where women are working, nobody's at home, children are coming home to an empty house, they have no guidance, they have no control in their lives, they're doing drugs, they're flipping out, it's becoming a decadent society, and that is seen very largely due to the breakdown of the family. Personally, Peter, I, for one, would not underestimate these arguments in this particular issue.
Yes, I'm quite sure you're right, because this also is proved by the results in that the country areas don't want any breakdown of the traditional family picture, whereas the Italian speakers and especially the French speakers in Switzerland traditionally are used to the state running far more than, for instance, the German-speaking part of the country want. they are used to having a welfare state, if you like.
They're used to so-called big government.
Right on.
Yeah.
Yes.
Interesting, though, Peter, that, and this puzzled me a little bit, the Swiss Christian Democratic Party, which is definitely Catholic-based, it's a middle-of-the-road, family values and everything else, yet they were for this family law, this revised family law with more state, more nurseries, more daycare centers paid by the state. How do you explain that?
Well, probably it has to do with the financing of the matter. If the issue had passed, then the federal government would have had to start paying far more for child services and schools and welfare services. They would have had to start paying for matters which are now paid for by the cantons. And it's quite likely that a party like the Christian Democrats, who have a lot of poor cantons among their members, would have liked to have the federal government open its coffers.
On the other hand, and let's be a bit charitable here, we've all heard of some really bad hard luck stories where in many families the wife and mother really wants to stay at home looking after her family and her children. We've heard many Swiss women say this. But yet they can't afford to do it because they're living, you know, they're part of the so-called urban poor or below the level that's considered poverty in this country, probably the most expensive country in Europe. With this in mind, do you expect that there might be some kind of an initiative within Parliament to try to find a solution to this, some kind of a compromise?
Yes, I'm quite sure the issue isn't dead at all, because in fact what's happening later in the year is that a couple of initiatives launched along the lines of the Swiss People's Party, i.e. the traditional family picture, will be coming up for the vote. And seeing as today's vote showed that 55% of voters are for more government involvement in family matters, I think that basically the traditional family picture is on the retreat.
Let's move on to the law on zoning. This is a very complicated issue, and in a way it's very, very Swiss. Perhaps, Peter, do your best to perhaps even oversimplify the issue before we go on to an analysis.
Well, I mean, basically you could say town and country planning is regulated at first by the local councils, the local authorities, who can decide which part of their village is a building zone, which part is agricultural land, and which part is industrial land. Now, obviously, there are national guidelines and cantonal guidelines about what belongs where, but basically the local council, which is made up of the butcher, the baker, and the candlestick maker, can decide who's allowed to sell his land or not.
And here, the first thought that comes into my mind is a lot of these local politics are discussed in the pub.
Oh, absolutely, yes, after the weekly council meeting, and this is basically one hand washes the other.
Yeah.
No doubt about it, that a builder will profit from a new zoning plan in the same way that a farmer can profit by selling land he doesn't want to use anymore as farming land. Certainly, it's not very transparent. The idea behind this new revised law is to limit the horrible urban spread that has been assailing Switzerland for the last 10 or 15 years. I mean, at the moment, there's an immense building boom, not least triggered by the 70 or 80,000 people who immigrate into Switzerland every year.
Well, now I think we've moved on to the core issue of this town and country planning, as you've correctly called it. You know, I live here in the Emmental, in a village of 1,700 people. We have a construction company here. I go up the road 1 mile, there's another construction company, and after that, there's another one. It seems to me that we have far too many construction companies in this country, and everybody expects to make a living from it. And to me, it simply translates into an uncontrolled, maniacal desire to put the entire country under concrete, and they will not be happy until that point is reached. And it seems to me that somebody has simply blown the whistle here and saying, this is it. The game is off. It's finished.
It's interesting that you say that, because underlying that is also an element of the rip-off initiative we were discussing earlier, because it shows that the Swiss people can have a limit and then say enough. And that's happened with the rip-off. And now with the acceptance of this town and country new law, by 63%, by the way, it shows that the Swiss are very uncomfortable at seeing all their arable land disappearing and being covered in concrete. And they are crying enough now. And what will happen, of course, is that this new zoning regime will mean that building will have to be less sprawling and will have to be more concentrated in centers.
And we had a special case here, the Canton of Valais in southern Switzerland. That was the only canton that rejected the initiative by a huge margin. And that simply is because, well, shall we call the child again by its name? They're the worst perpetrators.
Yes, it's basically the cause is because Canton Valais has far bigger building reserves. One of the elements of the Swiss town and country planning system is that every local council, every village has a reserve of building land, which is assessed to be what is necessary for the next 20 or 30 years. Now, obviously, in places like Canton Valais, who have, if you like, ripped off the system, they have huge building reserves of land which has been zoned into construction areas, which means that the land is far more valuable than any farming or industrial land.
You touched on this a minute ago, but what I think is quite interesting, we have to point out, to relativize this, as Swiss politicians love to say, and I think it's a good word, the Swiss, by nature, love nature. They love the outdoors, they love the pure nature, they want to protect it. And what's interesting here, which would seem to prove the widespread, very broad support for this new zoning law, is that it spanned almost the entire political spectrum. You had support from the right and the left.
Yes, and of course one also has to see that this law is a compromise which was produced in the face of an initiative which demands a moratorium on all building for the next 20 years.
You're talking about the Franz Weber initiative that we've discussed here last year. It's very closely related, isn't it?
Yes, and basically it has made everybody gun-shy because it's so extreme, it's probably unworkable, but also it would have tremendously negative effects on every kind of economic activity. So in other words, this compromise today, which was approved, was, if you like, also brought in under duress, because otherwise building boom would have carried on for many years. You have to realize that more and more Swiss are now buying property. It's only about 40% now who own property, but the current mortgage rates are under 2%. And this, of course, has led to an incredible building boom in and outside cities. And also, it's been, of course, exacerbated by the influx of 70 or 80,000 immigrants every year.
Well, once again, I think the comment applies here, a shot across the bow. The Swiss electorate has had enough. They're saying, halt, stop. We've had enough of this. It can't continue. In this same vein, Peter Haller, and perhaps related to it, an interesting cantonal vote in Switzerland's biggest canton, Canton Graubünden, the home of Davos, the home of St. Moritz, which was a famous venue many years ago as the Winter Olympics venue. That's the issue. The electorate in Canton Graubünden said no to a proposition to finance and make a bid to host the 2022 Winter Olympics. Did that surprise you?
Not really, no, because the campaign for the candidature, I think, was for many people far too gung-ho. It was far too upbeat with probably false expectations raised, false promises made. The other aspect is that apart from the valleys in which St. Moritz and Davos are situated, nobody in the canton would really benefit. But certainly it's also in line with, as you were saying, people have had enough of ever bigger expansion, be it in managers' salaries, be it in urban sprawl. I think it could be a turning point in this idea that things always have to go up, always have to be bigger, always have to be grander.
Peter Haller, Switzerland in Sound's political correspondent and analyst, thank you very much. Do you miss Swiss Radio International? If so, I invite you to visit my website, SwitzerlandInSound.com. Colorful and informative radio features about Switzerland, its destinations, interesting people, politics, culture, and even the two Bobs, SwitzerlandInSound.com, where English language radio from Switzerland lives on. This month marks the 43rd year of my observation and reporting on Switzerland and Swiss life. I must confess that in recent years, I lost some confidence in this country's traditional reputation for common sense and pragmatic politics. But things may be at a turning point. What made Switzerland great was its independent thinking. Swiss business managers were once distinguished and sought after because of their competence, compassion, and integrity, and their reliability. But like so many things that Europe and Switzerland used to consider cornerstones of their culture, the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989 and the ensuing resurgence of unbridled capitalism and greed brought with it corrupt business practices that also had their effect here. This situation was exacerbated by globalism, also in business education and operational practices. No, I'm not trying to whitewash Switzerland as saintly in its historically dubious behavior in banking and finance, but it was only in recent years that imported notions of what were even more dubious, immoral practices, took hold here too. But thanks to Switzerland's unique tradition of direct democracy, the people have stepped in to scream, enough is enough. And unlike other countries, they have clout. On March 3rd, Swiss voters went to the polls to pass judgment on people's initiatives of major moral and political import. One was to put an end to outrageous salaries, commissions, and bonuses that were being paid out to bankers and corporate managers like there was no tomorrow. It was an orgy of greed. Only a few years ago, the Swiss government had to bail out the country's biggest bank, the UBS, because of mismanagement and overspeculation in the American market. Not to mention aiding U.S. flight capital and tax evaders that cost the bank a huge amount of money in fines and lost prestige. But when the dust settled, it was business as usual, with sinfully high commissions and bonuses being paid out to the very people who caused the mess in the first place, as though nothing had happened. A couple of weeks ago, Daniel Vasella, the retiring CEO of the Basel pharmaceutical giant Novartis, was to be awarded a $72 million consideration in return for his promise to stay out of industrial circulation and not go to the competition for a period of 6 years. That was probably the straw that broke the Swiss voters' back, and they said an emphatic, no, that's it, at the polls. In a related but separate vote on the same day, the electorate also put pay to the widespread abuse of Switzerland's liberal zoning laws, which have allowed municipalities to designate land resources according to their own whims. This is typically Swiss, in that this country has a largely decentralized form of government. In the case at hand, land was often allocated according to the selfish wishes of local landowners and construction companies that had only one thing in mind, profit, without any regard or feeling of responsibility for the environment or for the natural, unspoiled beauty that the average Swiss holds so dear. These interests could only be described as maniacal and completely uncontrolled, as is the case with any kind of addiction. The order of the day in so many of these communities was to designate more and more land for building purposes, with landowners and construction interests set to make a financial killing as a result. And let's not forget that many of the vested interests were sitting as officials on the very same local councils. Again, in the same vein, the voters of Switzerland's largest canton, Graubünden, put the lid on all the hype surrounding a campaign to promote the canton as a candidate for the 2022 Winter Olympics. It should be said that Graubünden is host to Switzerland's national park and is rich in vast, unspoiled mountainous landscape. These are people who are close to nature and have a deep respect for it. They just weren't buying, literally or figuratively, the notion that they should invest billions in a project that would benefit only a very small part of the canton, namely Davos and St. Moritz, neither of which needs any further income. My point in all of this is my belief that the referenda of March the 3rd have restored my faith in the wisdom and horse sense of the Swiss voter. It has also proved, in the clearest of ways, the strength and genius behind the concept of Switzerland's direct democracy. Other countries have indirect democracy, so when a politically bad decision is made, the electorate can only sit and wring its hands and complain about those stupid politicians. But here in Switzerland, with its grassroots direct democracy, as one farmer so correctly observed, if you don't go to vote, it's your own fault if something goes wrong. I may have my gripes and criticisms of some aspects of Swiss politics and life, but the institution of direct democracy is certainly not one of them. There are no politicians to blame here, because each and every Swiss voter is a politician. The New Agers say that the end of the Mayan calendar did not mean the end of the world, but the beginning of a new age of enlightenment. From my point of view, the outcome of the voting on March the 3rd is an encouraging sign that this may well be the case. I can only hope and pray that it is so. At least, we in Switzerland seem to be off to a good start.
If you want more information about Switzerland in Sound, check them out online at www.switzerlandinsound.com.